I will. Jim Sykes.
Here.
Matthew Beck.
Here.
George McKee will not be present. Steve Culligan's running late. Dan Mayfield.
Here.
Barbara Doty's expected. Randall Kowalki.
Present.
You do have a quorum, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Let's stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Thank you. We're at the point where we have audience participation. This is the opportunity for anybody present to come up and speak to us. You have 3 minutes to do so, and if you come up, I'd ask you to, first person, to please turn the microphone on by pushing the little round button and to state your name for the record.
We ask if there's any changes to the agenda first.
Are there any changes to the agenda? Yes, Assemblymember Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I would like to make one change to the agenda, if I can find it here. I would like to remove action memorandum number...
Excuse me, Assemblymember Sykes, we're only on the special... 4 o'clock.
Well, no wonder I didn't have my agenda in front of me.
You set your clock ahead too far.
Well, then I can actually get my nap in.
Are there any changes to the agenda on the special agenda? Okay, then if there's no objection, is there any objection to moving on then? Okay, no objection. Now we're on to audience participation. I think anybody would like to come forward? Mr. Haberman.
My name is Eugene Carl Haberman. I reside in Matsinha Valley. I represent myself. I follow the process used by officials for these meetings, and if the appropriate process used for these public meetings, the decision made by the governing body will more likely be in the public interest. Please, first note on this agenda for this 4 o'clock session. You have audience participation again, special meeting. Then you go into the items that's going on the agenda, items of business. But how can you expect the public to respond to what's going to be said, because going to come after audience participation? Obviously, you're conducting a policy of indifference to my concern. To appropriately engage the public, you need the public to hear what's being said by your staff or whatever's going before you. The only thing that's on the packets, as far as this meeting is concerned, is an agenda. That's it. There's no supplemental information. I did see supplemental information at this meeting, but I didn't see it on the website. But still, even if it was there, the fact is that you continue on having reports come after audience participation, and the public cannot respond to what's being said. And you make decisions from those reports at these meetings. I plead with you, stop this policy of indifference and do it right. And I also noticed, I couldn't help but note that on the borough website, no, excuse me, on the Frontiersman page for the borough ad for Tuesday, it noted that there was going to be a meeting next week over at Colony High School. I would urge you to reconsider it. I know it surprised me because you don't see it on the website. But I made reference to also public hearings for the budget at later dates, but it's tied with some, looks like it's tied with something else, and has certain members of the assembly party to this thing. Now, at that same time, the city of Houston is holding a meeting on public city council meeting on not normal, but it is. It's going to be on marijuana. It's the second public hearing on the marijuana. And as you know, there's only two entities in the Matteson Valley right now that may be involved in connecting with the marijuana issue as far as allowing it to be done in business. One is the Matteson Borough, and the other is the city of Houston. Wasilla and Palmer are bowed out at this time. So the discussion of marijuana in these meetings, there shouldn't be a conflict for the public to choose between them. What's happening also next week is Monday, the city of Wasilla is holding a public hearing on marijuana, and the Borough Planning Commission is holding a public hearing on marijuana. And this has got to stop. You're splitting these people up, the public. so they can participate in this thing. The Marijuana Advisory Board had a public hearing on marijuana at the same time as marijuana, as the city of Wasilla previously held a marijuana advisory public hearing. That place was packed and hardly anyone was here for testimony. This has got to stop. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Haberman. We're still at audience participation. Is there anybody else who'd like to come forward to speak on any issue at all? Is there any objection if I close the audience participation? Then I think I need to pause because I don't think we have a quorum at the table. It's okay. Is there any objection if I close the audience participation? Okay, then I'll close the audience participation. Up to the items of business. And Mr. Manager, I'll hand this over to you, please.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking time to set a special meeting. We'd like to talk about the investment and work we've done on a classification and compensation study that has been done. We have our current classification compensation in the borough is about over 20 years old and has not been adjusted. And so we need to rebalance those for fairness, for pay equity, and to kind of move forward competitively. So Sonia Conyett, our HR director, is going to introduce Mr. Knowles from the Condry Associates for this. What we are expecting for is just to kind of have this out in public, have you ask some questions on the first half, and then the second part is compensation. We anticipate coming back and discussing this later this fall with the assembly, and because it's going to be regarding a change in compensation chart that we have right now, at least that's my proposal, it will be done in executive session and it will have to be negotiated with our union for any financial changes. So that is a plan. We've worked really hard on this. This really sets the foundation that we need to be effective in regards to our personnel operations expenses. So, Sonia, can you introduce Mark?
I'm going to pause there just for a moment and let the record indicate that Assemblymember Doty entered the meeting at 4:08 p.m.
Good afternoon, Assembly. I'm going to take a few moments to take you through some information about our classification system and where we're going, and then Mr. Knowles from Condry & Associates will take you through their efforts in this regard. So after the introduction page, we have the first slide in the presentation. So compensation systems are key to organizations, not only from the HR aspect of recruiting and retaining top talent for the organization to carry out its objectives, but it's also important from a financial standpoint. Labor costs are typically a significant portion of the overall operating budget for organizations. The program that you put in place for compensation needs to be continually evaluated to ensure that it's meeting your goals from an effectiveness standpoint. Is it getting the organization to a place that it needs to be to meet its goals and targets? Is it competitive? Are we able to recruit and retain the talent that we need to meet our organizational goals? Is it equitable? Is it a fair system for all employees? And then you have a legal compliance aspect. Is our system such that we're maintaining legal compliance with numerous labor laws out there? And we'll touch on those in a minute. A lot of times there's confusion regarding compensation, and a lot of people tend to think of compensation as being the total compensation, pay, benefits, incentives, those sorts of things. But our focus here today is on base pay only.
Sonia, if you want to just look at me when it's time, okay. I will do it.
Thank you. So the objectives of a compensation system are to attract and retain high caliber and qualified employees, maintain internal pay equity between employees in regards to their job responsibilities. So individuals doing similar work have similar scope and responsibility that they're being paid appropriately, making sure we're paying competitive wages, maintaining compliance with the numerous labor laws that are out there, and here's four listed for you. The Fair Labor Standards Act, Title VII Civil Rights Act, and there are numerous discrimination laws that springboard off of that one. the Equal Pay Act, Americans with Disability Act. Those are all laws that tie into compensation systems. We want to ensure that we have a cost-effective, consistent, and equitable administrative process for pay actions and pay policies. And this system is not focused on a pay-for-performance system. We're just focusing, again, on a market-competitive, equitable base pay system. What were some of the driving factors that got us to this point? Initially, we needed current data to go into labor negotiations, but as you know, we have our contracts in place for another year and a half, so that's not a pressing need today, but we still need to have an updated system. Our current system was implemented in 1991, so it's severely outdated, and so are many of the job descriptions that we're operating under. Through the history of the program, and because it has not been updated or made current, there have been inconsistent interpretations of the system, and it's been applied inconsistently, which has compounded a number of the pay equity issues that exist. Another driver is the borough currently has two pay plans. We have the standard pay plan that is used for a majority of our workforce who's full-time, so our union employees and those non-union employees who are full-time. It's also, the standard pay plan is used for our on-call 1,000-hour employees. Those are on-call library assistants, on-call pool employees, our trails maintenance technicians, our park maintenance technicians, our road maintenance technicians, administrative support personnel. That system uses a point factor system to determine pay grades. And that typically gets updated annually in alignment with whatever we've negotiated with our labor contract. The last time that was updated was in July of 2015, and it was given a structure adjustment of 2.25%. The other pay system we have is an on-call responder pay system, and that is where of the 450 of our on-call responders, their pay is aligned with. And so that's our on-call fire, our on-call emergency, medical technicians, our on-call rescue techs. So they're in this on-call responder tech pay structure. And the last time that one was updated was in July of 2012, and they each position in there got across the board $3 an hour raise. So between those two systems, there continues to be consistency and disparity issues, which to the last bullet there, raise legal compliance concerns. So the project objectives, we were looking for someone to come in and do a credible classification and compensation system to ensure that those positions that have similar scope, responsibility, knowledge, skills, that they're being paid in a like manner and they're classified together. We want to make sure that the pay is commensurate with assigned duties. We wanted to make sure that we had opportunity for promotional growth and development. So if there's opportunity to create levels 1, 2, and 3 in a job class to do that so that there is clear growth for the employee and clear promotion opportunity for our employees to improve retention. If there is pay differential, we want to make sure that it's justifiable and it's based on sound practices. And then again, maintain currency with the relevant labor market. The project scope. We needed someone to come in and revise our classification system. And then in doing that, we need employees to be allocated to the appropriate job title, job description, classification. And we also asked that they assign the appropriate designation under the Fair Labor Standards Act, whether or not someone is exempt from overtime or non-exempt. We asked that every job description be reviewed and developed into the updated format, and it has current information regarding duties, scope, and responsibilities. Standardization was important. We asked them to conduct a salary survey and looking specifically at the Alaska market and in like organizations. So they have done that for us. In doing that, we were asking for the consultant to recommend a pay range for each classification based on the job evaluation. And also market data and where that fits in. We want to ensure that whatever we do is maintained and the practices are sound and continue. So we are asking for the consultant to give us the tools to make sure we maintain the system and implement it appropriately. There is also an appeal process built in to this in the event that there's disagreement around where a job has come out. There's an appeal process. And then we also ask for 1 year of technical support to ensure that we're doing it doing it right and that we're just not left to implement the program if there's challenges. So the next slide, what we're looking for in a consultant, we wanted someone who had advanced knowledge specific to classification and compensation systems and specific to local governments or public entities. The other thing we wanted is they have to have a demonstrated track record in this field. So a minimum of 10 years of experience doing this type of work. And finally, they need to have a demonstrated understanding of what we're asking them to do and the expectations. So the project was kicked off in 2015. The contract was awarded in early September. And within a couple weeks, the consultants were on site, met with leadership, held employee meetings to explain the process and to kick that off. Our current status today, job descriptions have been drafted. The salary survey has been complete. Positions have been classified and positions have been given a pay grade assignment. So we're fairly in a fairly good position regarding this project. We want to ensure its integrity. So I am going to hand it off to Mark Knowles from Condre and Associates, and he'll give you more details on their methodology.
Thank you, Sonia. Good evening. My name is Mark Knowles, and I'm a principal consultant with Condre and Associates. And we can go through to the next slide. I'll tell you just a little bit about Condre and Associates. I've served with Dr. Steve Condre about 28 years in some capacity, doing classification and pay analysis work for him the entire time. His company has a philosophy of doing hands-on consulting and encouraging participation throughout the organization as we develop a classification system for your organization. Dr. Condre has led some 800 different projects throughout the United States. I've worked on just over, I think, as I was calculating today, just over about 400 different projects in some 35 states. And Dr. Condre also serves on the Federal Labor Salary Council, widely respected in this field, and also as a past president of the American Society of Public Administration. But anybody who does human resource work, basically his book is what we use to learn that. And I've been fortunate to work with him. You have before what I'd like to do tonight is give you a presentation. I will go through a more orderly process, but if you have questions as I go through each slide, please stop me and ask me questions. I'm here for that purpose. I have served as a project manager for the project on behalf of Dr. Condre, and so I should be versed and be able to answer most of the questions that you would have. I do work for him directly though. Our objectives of the study, we were charged to review and upgrade your existing current classification and pay system for the entire Bureau. So it wasn't just one of the programs, but one of the systems that you have, but the entire system. We were charged with developing a new and complete and valid description for each job. We wanted to ensure standardization. We were to look at some career paths for your organization, and we were to do that by making sure that the system that we recommend is both internally equitable, how we treat each other within the system, and then externally competitive, so how you compete with the world when you try to hire and retain individuals. Of course, we were to make sure that we ensure compliance with applicable laws. We were to do that through a wage survey data by testing the market, but also to recommend a pay plan that's not just based on specific wage data, but also about a classification system as a whole for job evaluation. And so it's a combination of both internal and external. And then we were to come back with a recommended system that you can effectively administer and is useful for your organization. On average, most organizations go through a process like this about every 10 years. You've taken them about 25 years to go through the overall process again. But the last thing you want to do when you start a project like this is to come back with something that you can't implement. So we take that challenge seriously, and we hope we've come back with something that you will be able to use for some 7 to 14 years in the future. On average, you don't want to check it up, do a comprehensive checkup about every 10 years. Okay? In our initial assumption, and I was at the bottom of that slide, is and when you undertake a study like this, you come in with the understanding that no individual's pay or compensation will go down in a study like this. And we start with that base. Why is a compensation plan important? Either it has a negative or a positive influence on your organization. It's never neutral. Whatever system you have, it can hurt you or it's going to help you. The goal of a system is always to build that will have a positive influence and encourages individuals to perform at a high level and function within your organization. It is an investment in an administrative infrastructure. It's one of the largest investments that any steward is typically involved with whenever they serve as a leader of an organization that implements one of these. It will help you with recruitment and selection, and most importantly, retention, maintaining a quality workforce. And it's a best practice, so it will ultimately save your organization money when you have a system that's effective for your organization. And it costs, any cost that you put into a system like this is something that you should look at and cost out over time. It will pay off a dividend over about a 10-year to 14-year period on average. So when you do finally look at the actual cost of the program, think of it in terms of that sort of infrastructure investment. Your current system has some challenges, and we were told these as we came in. First, it's out of date. It's since 1991 was the last major update. That's some 25 years now. Most systems at stretch to make 10 years. Job descriptions do not reflect a modern work. So you had particular job descriptions that were out of date, and you have to frequently update those. The pay system itself lagged the market slightly, between 3-5% on average. You found yourself with inconsistent application of classifications. Essentially, you were taking your existing system and applying it non-uniformly within your organization, and it produced some inequities in your system. That can create some legal compliance issues for you if you don't correct those. And our goal was to help you by correcting those. We were charged with first reviewing the internal equity. We approached that first just some issues that you're faced with. You currently have two pay plans. You have one that's the standard pay plan, and they have the on-call plan. The system itself was implemented in 91, well beyond the average life. It's the inconsistent application of point factors, as we've talked about, are creating some inequities. And then the job descriptions are not necessarily up to date. As we go forward on the slide, we'll see that in our review, we also... looked at externally, there's been no comprehensive review of the overall market, but there's been rather individual market comparisons, individual jobs, or negotiations about individual classifications. Certain positions that you have are actually above the market. Certain positions are below the market, so you've gone out of alignment. Your overall compensation plan itself has, though, fallen behind the market from an overall standpoint. In the new pay plan methodology that we are approaching, the normal percentage now we're recommending is about a 50% between minimum to maximum in your ranges. You're currently at a more compressed system, and this will allow you some growth within those positions. There's now recommended 5% between the grades in your system. You have a current system of 33 grades, and we're going to a system that has about 27 grades, I believe, at the end of the day. It's a total of 20 that are actually used. So what you're seeing about a 5% up to grade 20, where the spread is consistent, but once you get above that, it's somewhat compressed than at the lower grades, but there's fewer positions in those top grades. So we're giving you a system that you can manage easier and more effectively. I'll go through to the next slide. How do we accomplish the study? First, I've been on site at every meeting as a project manager, but we conducted an orientation first. We came on site on September 21st. We met with all employees who were able, some remotely, we taped it, and we walked them through the process that we were going to use to accomplish our objectives. Every employee was provided a questionnaire. The questionnaire itself was meant to gather information about their jobs. We walked them through that questionnaire, answered questions, even after we were here for a period of about 6 weeks to allow them to give information on a form that's used to gather data about their jobs to allow us to classify. The questionnaire was then reviewed by an immediate supervisor. They were charged with helping the employee. Most times individuals will understate their jobs, and you want to make sure you gather the correct information, but they were not to change anything the employee gave to us, so they can amplify that or correct it if necessary. And then we had an additional level of review by a department head, primarily for organizational structure and how it fits within that individual department head's organization. Then that was provided to us. We then came on site. We brought a team of subject matter experts. We had, I think, a team of 6 or 7 on this project. For example, in the fire, we brought a former fire chief with some 35 years plus experience who rose through the ranks, had served in positions, and then had actually led a statewide fire academy, a training academy, very active in this field. And he would have been the one to meet with fire-related positions. Others who came on site had backgrounds in finance or technology, and they should have been able to converse with that individual about their individual jobs. We gathered that data through interviews. We interviewed just right about 70% of all Bureau employees. Those were typically about 15 minutes on average to gather information. We met with supervisors and department heads in a longer period to discuss the roles within their organization. We then left, we took that information, we developed job descriptions. We had one technical writer, Dr. Greg Reese, wrote job descriptions for every individual within the organization, every position. Sometimes you had multiple individuals responding to a position or about a position, so you would take that and you consolidate it in order to develop that job description. Those have been sent back, reviewed, I think not once, not twice, but now 3 times. So it's a completely vetted system to gather information about that jobs. Those jobs have been classified using the factor evaluation system. FES is a foundation of human resource management in the United States. It's not something radical by any means. It's an established methodology that was initially developed to bring somewhat order to a more patronage type system. And it was developed by the U.S. Civil Service Commission, and it's accepted methodology. Most local governments use this or form of FES. As you move forward, you'll find some basic information about FES. But is the result of many years of research, and it's an established body of knowledge. And only to say that it's not a proprietary system, so you're not paying us an ongoing fee of some sort in order to maintain your system. It's something that we'll be able to train you, and whenever we leave, individuals here, as they apply it uniformly and across the organization, then they'll be able to pick it up and move with it. It is a philosophy that's not radical. The concept that there's 10 compensable factors at the local government level. At the federal level, they typically use 9. We add a 10th at local government. Some states do. That the 10th factor has to do with supervisory responsibility. We give credit for individuals who train other people, for example, a lead worker, to somebody who's a first level supervisor all the way up to a department head. Some 7 different levels that we've added to that. And that's the only difference between what's used at the federal level and what's used at the local government level. It is somewhat a flexible system. It's a social science. So there's room for some disagreement, but there's a way to bring consensus to the classification of a job. And even this morning, as we went through a example of how that worked, we had a grouping of about 10 individuals, and we were able to bring a consensus to that, the classification of one job within your system, and as we train that. The next slide you'll see here the levels and knowledge, the factors and the levels that are assigned. And as I'll just quickly walk through here, the knowledge required by the position is the first. It is a weighted system, and most of the points that are assigned are based in the knowledge. 36% of all points are at the knowledge level. And there's 7 levels. So for example, if a job would require no knowledge, somebody basically can come in and perform the job without any knowledge brought into it or any kind of experience, that would be level 1. As you move forward to, say, for example, level 4, here maybe somebody is an apprenticeship level who has had some basic training, some knowledge level training, or has an associate's degree kind of capacity, would be at a level 4. At a 5, potentially, a job that requires a bachelor's degree or 4 to 6 years of active on-the-job training, there's some equivalency factors there, that would be like a level 5. And there's 7 levels that apply to the local government level. Now, if somebody was to go do some research, you would find that there's actually 9 levels that are associated. We just do not find the levels 8 and 9 at the local government level. These are very, very complex jobs that receive the 8s or 9s. And this, for example, at the federal level might be somebody who is actually defining an entire body of knowledge, somebody who's whose research is so proficient that it's just a high level and very unique type of individual or position. And that's where those 8s and 9s fit. But we do not observe that in this organization, and it would be very rare I'd find that at the local government level. Supervisory control, 5 levels. Guidelines, 4. Complexity, 4. Scope and effect, 4. Personal contacts, purpose of those contacts, there's 3 each. The physical demands and work environment, somewhat built around ADA requirements and others, at 3 levels, and then the supervisory management responsibility at 7 levels. Each one of those levels are assigned points. For example, we learned today, at level 4, it's 550 points within the knowledge factor. Everybody who qualifies at level 4 gets those points. As you go through and you evaluate every single position, and once again, not the individual, but the position itself and how it relates to your organization, you add up those points, and you're going to see some natural groupings within your organization mathematically. And those are how you develop your grades within your system. And they'll group together. So those who have a total number of points of 1,950, and within the organization, there might be a range of maybe 100 that you're looking at. They're all kind of grouped together. And so the ones who have 1,950 and the ones that have 1,975 become a grade, potentially a grade 18 or 19. And that's how we get to our grades. So we've applied that mathematical formula to your organization as a whole in order to produce your plan. And that's your internal analysis to make sure that jobs, equal jobs, are paid in equal ways. Doesn't mean that everybody's paid exactly the same, but in ranges that make sense within an organization so anyone can pick it up, understand how it's done, and then apply that somewhat consistently. As a social science, there's room for disagreement, but we do have methods to come to that agreement. Excuse me. On the external analysis, the next slide. We surveyed your local marketplace. You told us who to survey. We had 13 respondents. Excuse me. Most organizations, private organizations, typically would not respond to a survey like this. The survey itself is a comprehensive benchmark survey. We looked at some 40 to 50 different positions within your organization. These are commonly placed positions that you should find at all these organizations on a large degree level. In addition, it wasn't just a title survey. It was a survey of job major duties. So it was conducted by the University of Florida Survey Research Center. They're tops in their field. People who receive their survey want to respond simply because the product that they get back is a very nice, personalized type product that is of value to them. They participate, they have to have a high degree of match. We pull that information together in order to calculate a new marketplace with you. We also looked at other organizations that have produced surveys. Excuse me. I've been traveling a lot and it's a little dry. But we looked at other organizations that have produced, such as the Alaska Municipal League, also the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and there's a comprehensive survey that you do within your state that's tied to individual jobs. And we, in order to produce a recommended, to tell you actually where the market's at. Okay, that's the part we use for the external analysis. Our analysis has found that you have certain positions above market. That's clear. We have positions that are below market, meaning that you've come out of alignment. So your overall system needed to have a fresh look at it. As a whole, your compensation system is just slightly below market, not something which could be considered a serious situation. Okay, we said between 3% and 5%, that would be somewhat common. Okay, and as you move forward, you will find you have moved anywhere closer to the overall market, but you need to fix that alignment to be able to tell that exactly. Your job descriptions are out of date, and we have updated those for you. And there were some FLSA adjustments that needed to happen, and we've made some recommendations for that. Some points for discussion. An updated classification system, usually we're given to you, that's a generally accepted methodology. It's not something radical. It's something that's found in other organizations. It's a good system. It works, and it will work for your organization. All your job descriptions are up to date. We deliver those here today, and there would be time to have those. The new pay scale would be competitive, and that would be a part of your, as you go forward. You'll further professionalize and strengthen the infrastructure of the organization. You'll be in compliance with FLSA, and and you'll have increased legal compliance with it. And we'll stand ready to work to implement the new system for you. With that, I'll stop and try to answer some questions for you.
Assemblymember Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Thank you very much, Mr. Knowles, for your presentation. I do have a number of questions, though. First of all, about the process, which you did describe, but I just would like to kind of get an idea. You mentioned 15 minutes with some employees and more time on the directors. How much more time? And I'd just be interested in sort of a quantifying how much time you did take with each director to sort of understand what it is that we do.
Mm-hmm. The actual time itself, those were the interview times that we came on site. We met when we came in at orientations, and we had spent time with a group setting, so that's part of that. We then also have also gathered information beforehand in terms of the actual organizational structure, the charts, and then we sat down with each department head. Most of those should have taken between, depending on the size of the department, about 30 to potentially as much as an hour and 15 minutes for every department. And I would say that we shared not with every single position we interviewed, but we typically interviewed multiple people within a position. So you don't necessarily need to meet with every single person equal amount of time. You're gathering information from the various incumbents within a classification by meeting with multiple ones. Does that answer the question?
Yes.
Assemblymember Doty, and then we'll.
That's fine.
Okay.
Thank you. I appreciate the presentation. A couple of questions. Please clarify for me the 33 grades down to 27 grades, but we only use 20. What about those other seven?
Well, what you typically will find is you'll start from grade 1 all the way to grade, in our system, grade 20, maybe 27 to up to 29 potentially. What I would do typically see. The grades first, the 1s through 5, you would use those typically for maybe part-time non-functioning positions within your organization that you bring in part-time, so you're not really classified. They don't classify out. You may, in some organizations, you can start scoring full-time positions at a grade 6, 7. I don't believe you have anyone below a grade 7 in your organization that grades out that way. And then we step up from grade 27 up to grade 27. So there's a total of 20 that are functioning within your system.
So just for clarification, you're not, the first seven grades don't exist.
That's for, yeah, basically.
That's very clear. Do you have a follow-up?
I just don't understand why we'd have a system with seven grades that we don't use.
Mr. Assemblymember, what reason why most organizations want that, you would use it for typically for part-time positions that you might bring in on a part-time basis. And that's why those first five start out that way. But like any system, you could collapse those and not use them. It's just a mathematical reason.
Let the record indicate that Assemblymember Culligan, thank you. I was going to say Culver. Yeah, arrived at 4:38 p.m. And we're over to Assemblymember Kowalki with your question, please.
Yes, with the group that participated, the external analysis, I'm not confident that the borough of Kenai is any better shape than we are in, and yet we were going to them to see what they were doing. Was there any vetting process of these other organizations as to how up to speed they were prior to utilizing any information they had?
That's a very good question, and there's a couple ways that you do that. First, when you do a survey of this nature, you don't automatically just rule out another organization simply because you're trying to get some that are somewhat of a match. But then you go ahead and ask them a question, you cast a broad net. When you cast a broad enough net, you say in this case here 13 different organizations, one or two organizations will not unduly influence the overall results from a statistical standpoint. In addition, within each position, we're analyzing the difference away from the mean on every single result, so that we're testing to make sure that we're not getting bad information. But just like that, potentially the bureau that you speak to might be a little bit lower, you may have another one that somebody would point to very quickly and say, well, this is certainly much higher. So you want to make sure you cast that broad net in order to offset that. And with a universe of 13 different organizations, with over 40 different positions that were finally used in the survey, it would provide you a very high degree of certainty that this is a market that you can trust.
Do you have a follow-up?
Was the question asked whether they were on a 7-year or less cycle for this same process? Was that question asked?
No, sir. And the reason what you've asked us to ask is, what is the market? What are you competing against out there in terms of a job? So you ask, do you have this job? And if you do, what are you paying it in your organization? What are you actually advertising at your minimum? What are you actually paying someone today to do the job? And what's the most that you're willing to pay? And then we were going to take that from all the organizations, and we're going to look at that statistically from the mean, the median. We also will test the mode, and then we'll test for any standard deviation in order to make sure that the data that you have is reliable for you.
Okay. Assemblymember Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'll ask a group of questions that are sort of connected. You mentioned the part-time employees. We have a couple of, we've got a lot of on-call people from not just DMS, but other places, and we've got kind of two sets of them that, you know, some are capped at 1,000 hours, others are 1,554. And so I guess my question related to that is, now that you've come up with these job descriptions, what level of involvement have the directors and the employees had to talk about these job descriptions or classifications? And am I understanding you correctly that the reason you would want to develop these new classifications would be to make them more precise? And it seems like you're trying to assign a mathematical level to this, but so how do you deal with the measurement of skill levels by education and experience? Because, you know, some things might be arrived at one way and others the other, or both.
And that's a very good question, Assemblymember. What you've asked us to do is to bring and establish methodology that can be used, and we've done that. The factor evaluation system is an established body of knowledge. I'm not going to pull it out of the air in order to classify a job, or as a department head, I'm not going to say this is how I value the job. There's a rational process behind it. And I can put 10 people in a room, like I did today, all from different backgrounds, and we can classify that job together within your organization, and we can build you an internally equitable system as long as it's applied uniformly and concise in the same way across the organization. And so that's what we were trying to bring to you, is that order and how you would actually classify. Now, the department heads, by themselves, the supervisors, the individual employees have all been involved throughout the entire process. But you did not ask them to classify the jobs. You've asked us to classify them for you. We brought the team of individuals to do that. There will be a time when we present that to you, organization, and if you adopt our recommendations, if there's a difference of opinion, there would be a way, a workable way, an acceptable way to bring any sort of differences that they may see or an individual may see, and we'll work through that difference of opinion. That's an accepted way to accomplish the internal equity.
Assemblymember Sykes.
I'd just like to follow up on that. So when would you envision presenting this to the employees or the directors for further discussion? I have one more question after that.
Of course, that's a question that the manager would help.
Okay. Mr. Manager?
yes, and as Mark said, we have been working with the employees and employee groups. We met today with the union leadership. Tomorrow we have a group of staff that we'll be discussing this with. We also, I believe, tomorrow, the next day, we will be getting what we feel is the almost final version of the job descriptions. Job descriptions were done, inputted. They were sent back. The employees reviewed those, made some comments and changes. They were sent back, and adjustments were made as see fit. And so now they're going to come back a third time, and we want to get what we call in the job descriptions and evaluation as our foundation. So that's going to happen pretty shortly here. We're going to be working through that. At the end of the summer, because this is job classification, but it's also compensation. Compensation cannot happen without first coming to the assembly. We'll do that in executive session, and when we have the final version or versions of this new compensation chart, we will come to the assembly, executive session, talk through that, get your blessing. At that point in time, we'll engage with our union folks and negotiate moving from one salary chart or one compensation to this new one that's being proposed. So we're probably going to take, you're probably not going to see that with the assembly until probably late August, as I anticipate right now.
Other questions, Assembly Member Sykes?
I'd like to follow up first with the manager. So my understanding is that we aren't up to renegotiate the contract for like over a year, maybe a year and a half. So would this be an interim change that you are intended to make in the contract?
That is what I'm going to ask you to consider. We have a broken system right now that's unfair, as explained, and after 25 years, we want to fix it. So there will be some financial costs to that. We don't have that cost right now. We're working on different options, but we want to come back and present that to the assembly and discuss it, and then move forward from that point.
We're going to jump over to Assemblymember Doty, if you don't mind, take a little break.
I don't mind.
Just a follow-up. Thank you very much. This is just about, you said some are overcompensated, some are undercompensated, and this is perhaps to the manager. It's just those that are overcompensated, how does that get handled in this situation with the adjustment?
I will be talking with the assembly and then the union, but essentially it is my strong recommendation that those people will not lose, if they're overcompensated, they will not lose dollars. They'll be in place until the market catches up. That is going to be my proposal to the assembly. We don't want to make a bunch of winners and losers, but we need to fix our system. It is it was done a while ago, and it's been jerry-rigged for specific individuals, and it's unfair. Some folks are paid more than they should, but we have many, many, many people who, for some reason, are not being treated fairly. And we have a workforce that gives their time and effort and sweat here. They need to be sure that they're being treated consistently and fairly. And this is what really the main point of this. Plus, actually coming into, I guess it is a 21st century because it's been a while.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Assemblymember Mayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. So as you move through your classification study, was there any modification of the classification system, meaning did you consolidate various different classifications into one? And if so, how much was that done?
There's probably I'm hearing two different questions there. The FES that we use, there's been no adjustments to that. I mean, it was applied uniformly. Whether you may have two positions that were that was merged into one position. Yes, I do believe you've had that happen a couple of times, and I regret that I'm unable to tell you exactly how many. But you moved down for how many jobs did you have before, Sonia? About two. You probably lost about 20 different classes, I would guess. I can get you a precise number, but it was not a significant number as a whole, and some of those jobs weren't filled that you had in your system.
So my concern there is, someone like a firefighter, let's say, there are a lot of different firefighters. Mm-hmm. They all perform the same types of duty. They fight fire, but they may have various different responsibility roles in performing that duty. Mm-hmm. So, I'm leery of dumbing down mm-hmm. Positions.
And we work too. We try not to do that. Okay. So, here might be an example. When I do the financial area, you may have basically two people who might have been in two different jobs, and let's just choose, are not actual examples, but could have happened. Let's just say they both were in accounts payable, and one might have been an accounts payable senior, and one's an accounts payable junior. Well, we may have, because there's only two people, we may have merged that to just one job of accounts payable, and then gave you a broader range that would allow you to accommodate that those two individuals in a progressive way using a career path within the range. And so that would be jobs that would be in the same family, the same class, and make sense. Now, to come in a fire arena where you actually have other factors such as the organizational structure and the command structure and things of that nature, as well as the very specific certifications, that would be highly unlikely that we would have merged those. There would be a reason for that other to have occurred. Okay.
And so a question to the manager, if I would, when are we going to see those classifications?
You are going to see the compensation proposal or chart probably late August. We still want to make sure, like I said, we'll be working, number one, with getting the job descriptions correct and moving forward, and then we're going to be working to make sure we have the what we feel comfortable with, the right compensation schedule. And also too, what we need to do is compare where we are and where we're going. So you're going to want all the details. Just like we do in negotiations, you sit down, talk different positions, and how much it's going to cost and what effect it's going to have on a borough and a borough operation. So we'll be putting that together. But the emphasis I want to have is we need to fix the system first. Let's fix it, and then we will go back and we work at the compensation on how that's affected.
Okay, I think Assemblymember Sykes is on deck here, and Assemblymember Doty, you're on deck.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I would like to follow up first on Assemblymember Mayfield's question, where you do have an instance of people doing different jobs, like you might have a mechanic that might also want to drive a ambulance or something, whatever. And they're not the same career path, obviously, but within the context of what they do for that division, it might be very consonant. How do you deal with those things? And I really would like to know if you did dig into the 1,000-hour and 1,554-hour things, because it seems to me like if we don't have grades 1 through 7, are you thinking that that'd be a place to do that?
A couple of questions that I heard in that statement there, but first terminology. Every single job description is graded individually, because that's one thing. So we're going through that process now. Everybody's seeing those. The first seven really are for, as I should say, first five are really for very purely part-time, not your own call. Your own call positions, they are actually in fully classified jobs. And so you have those, and you have to deal with equal pay for equal work rules in that situation. So if someone's a librarian and they're on call, it doesn't matter if they're on call, they're still treated as a librarian, just like a librarian who would be full-time. Okay, so that's just a class. And how an individual falls within, whether or not they're a 1,000-hour or a full 2080, that really is an HR management type. It's not something we're dealing with. Now, as far as a job, let's just say you had a mechanic and then you had another job combined that was a mechanic and an ambulance driver. Well, clearly that job is different. So we would have two job descriptions written. One would be for a mechanic and one would be for a mechanic slash ambulance driver, if that was the case. So I would not just arbitrarily just dump that into the mechanic. Okay. Occasionally, I don't know if you have this within your organization or not from memory, but if you have a mechanic full-time and then somehow reason or another you have a working as an ambulance driver on call, then they would potentially work out of class into another job. And that would be when they're working as an ambulance driver, they're paid as an ambulance driver. Okay. Now, that could happen within an organization.
Assemblymember Doty.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. This may be a question for Sonia through the manager, but it's really about eligibility for step increase and performance evaluations, whether that's based on both performance measures that are defined. I know we were working on that for the manager and for some of the other who are senior positions. Maybe you could speak to that.
So our step increase system is based on longevity. So if an employee's still here on their anniversary date, they get a step increase as long as they're still within the structure. So our current pay system is not tied to performance. The theory is that if there are performance issues, that those are being dealt with on the management side, and either the employee has been coached up or managed up, or the disciplinary process has started. We have had a handful of individuals in my time here that if they had non-stellar evaluations, needs improvement, that they were not eligible for a step increase, but that's not typically the model.
So to follow up, so that sounds to me like a tenure system where there's no preceding episode where you are immediately tenured when you're hired. And is that, I know that's the current state, I'm not sure that's consistent with the private sector in terms of equity, and I just would like to hear what other options we have with that.
That's our current process with our current collective bargaining agreement. So as we go through negotiations with that, we can look at that.
Assemblymember Mayfield.
Along the same lines through the Deputy Mayor. So how do we handle an employee who performs in an extraordinary manner on behalf of the taxpayers they're just an extraordinary employee. How do we recognize them?
So there's a couple options. We have our recognition program, which is a quarterly Employee of the Quarter award. Then there's also an opportunity for merit, a merit increase. However, that there's many requirements that someone has to meet. They have to show that it was great customer service, that they've financially saved the organization money, that they went above and beyond, they have consistently performed and exceed standards. They consistently perform above standard. So it's usually not a one-time deal. It has to be something very significant. And John, you might want to speak to that or not speak to that.
Okay. Assemblymember Sykes.
I'd like to thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Through the Deputy Mayor to Mr. Knowles. Something that just caught my eye as you were going through your presentation was you said your system of analysis is the state of the art, and it uses the latest techniques. So what is the difference between the state of the art versus the previous techniques? It seems to me like you're using something that is very long established. So what's different about this approach that you're doing?
Even though it's long established, it's still state of the art. It's the system that works in most organizations, and it works in all organizations. So it's the state of the art. There is no better system. I'm just as clear. I'm standing here. There's no better system in local government to use.
Well, what were you doing before? It was different.
What you see, and still in certain places, you see more patronage-style systems where you basically you decide. You maybe let a director decide who to pay what. Okay, you don't have a lot of control at the assembly level for that. In other systems, I see one organization where they paid across the board. Everybody made the same. Those are not state. That is, there's no rhyme or reason to that. It's hardly defensible. In this particular the FES, it meets the mandates that we have. It works within your organization. It's a best practice, meaning it saves money for organizations that implement it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your presentation.
Assemblymember Doty.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. My next question is really about the step increase in the face of significant economic downturn. And I know the borough has been through that in the past. But if it's an automatic step increase, regardless of the economic CPI index, for instance, or other measures, how is that handled in this system?
I can speak to what we recommend. You may have other obligations that you've negotiated that would be outside of our realm of responsibility, but in this particular system, you would only move whenever the assembly decides to move. So you would apply that uniformly, and you would move your organization as a whole each year, and that would be a recommended, and that's one of the actual options thereafter you adopt. So it's not promised, it's contingent.
So just a follow-up? Actually, back to the borough manager clarification, since we're dealing with a unionized system, how would that be handled then? So the question is really about if I have a significant economic downturn and the fair market value for employment is different than it was when this survey was done, and yet we've got a step system in place, how does that get adjusted?
Well, if the market changes, we'd certainly go back to the market and get the data. And then it would, if it was in the contract where the step increase happened, we would sit down and negotiate that for reasons. I mean, it has happened. My past job in Chisago County, we had the nationwide economic downturn. We have done that. We've delayed, and we actually delayed steps 6 months to kind of help us through. You know, it comes down to discussion. If we need to cut regarding our operations and personnel is a large part, how the best way to do it. Essentially, negotiations they wanted the pay increases. They insisted on that, went to arbitration. We did furloughs, you know, two-week furloughs where everybody took off 2 weeks without pay. And then we did layoffs for a certain percentage. So. We have a majority of our employees represented. It would just be negotiations. Essentially, the assembly gets to say, you know, what services and how much they're willing to pay, and then it's up to us to kind of negotiate and work to make sure that that pay level or that a dollar amount is hit.
Any other questions or comments? Assemblymember Doty.
Thank you. And this may be just for clarification and perhaps to Sonia, but a compensation package also includes benefits. And this doesn't address the benefits. And specifically, and I know that there's a negotiation component with that with the union, but I've requested that we consider looking at, particularly our health benefits and how we're incentivizing wellness. I know that can be a negotiated component. But I don't know how our benefit package percentage-wise compares to the competitive sector.
So we just looked at some numbers today. So if you take a $70,000 position, the cost of benefits is about 56%. Our health care package annually is about $24,000, $25,000 a year. And then you put the PERS retirement benefit on top of that, and then life insurance. So that figure is not including the mandatories, the FICA and the unemployment and workers' comp. So compared to the private sector, that is high. So that is one thing. That's why we want to make it clear that we're focused here on base pay. It's not the total compensation.
Just my understanding is that 25 to 28% is about what our current highest employer in the community is paying, which is the hospital. So that's a significant difference. I just would like to see some comparison numbers in the community.
Okay.
Any further questions? Okay, I thank you very much. That's very good.
Thank you, and we enjoy working with you. If you have any questions, please let me.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're at the point of the agenda where we have comments, so we'll start with Mr. Attorney. Do you have any comments? Thank you. Madam Clerk? Mr. Manager, any further comments? Assembly members, I'll leave it open. Any assembly members like to comment? Assembly Member Sykes.
Well, I just, as this process goes along, I'd really like to kind of just get a feel for how the exchange is going and how the employees are able to comment on what's being proposed and make sure that there is a real full participation for everybody involved and just get an update on it.
Thank you. Assemblymember Culligan.
I just want to comment. I'm sorry I was late. I was going to be out of town today, but anyway, I am pleased that we're at least moving forward on some of these things. We've had this discussion for many years of, you know, it's been probably 30 years since I worked for the borough, and it seems like there's a lot of those same systems in place and time cards. I'm just glad to see we're evolving and keeping a respectful conversation and putting the tools in place we need for employees and for management, but thank you.
Any other comments? And I don't have any comments either, other than I really appreciated the presentation and I appreciate where we're going with this. So that being said, at 5:07, I'll adjourn the meeting.